Prescriptions for Health with Dr. Len and Vicky Saputo, Mondays at 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network.
Broadcast out of New York City, you're listening to Prescriptions for Health on Monday, January 23rd, 2012. I'm Dr. Len Saputo.
And I'm registered nurse Vicky Saputo. Thank you for joining us on our weekly Prescriptions for Health show on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com every Monday live from 3 to 4 p.m. Eastern Time and from 12 noon to 1 p.m. Pacific Time. And remember that our shows are archived on DrSaputo.com and PRN.fm.
Today you're going to hear Vicky's 2020 health tips at 20 after the hour and 22 the hour. And we've got a really good show for you today that's going to include, should participation in vaccine trials be mandated? Can you believe that?
And can your shower curtain or your tampon make you fat?
Holy smoke. Stay away from those. And some practical advice for avoiding environmental toxins.
MDs fail to order preventive health screens.
And what about Meprobamate after all these years, also known as Miltown and Equinil, is being recalled after 50 years? What's the FDA been sitting on?
You know, IV vitamin C is known to cause dramatic improvements in patients that are seriously ill and comas and allergies and so forth, and it can even be used to help treat cancer. So how to take mega doses of vitamin C, we're going to talk about, when indicated without the IVs.
Yeah, that'd be great.
And much more.
Okay. And plus, if you want to join our conversation and have questions about our topics for your health, give us a call at 888-874-4888.
So, should people be forced to participate in vaccine trials as suggested by the British researchers in the Journal of Ethics published by the American Medical Association?
Oh, my God, can you believe
it? I like that it's called the Journal of Ethics.
Yeah, really? I mean, what ethics? This sounds like Nazi Germany, where we do experiments on people. And they're suggesting that as a possibility because these scientists have got tunnel vision. What they do is they look at just what they want to do. They don't take any account of what's involved in getting their work done. And it's kind of a narcissistic thing.
Well, actually, they concluded that making it mandatory to choose whether to be in the vaccine trials would be more respectful of people's right rather than making them be in the trial.
The way they word it as being more respectful, I would word it another way and say it's not nearly as pathetic as. Because people shouldn't be required to do anything.
Or maybe a little more democratic.
Well, I think that try to impose medical experiments on the population is just the next step to government that's going to arrive big time.
Well, wouldn't it be easier to just go ahead and do the trials on the people that have already gotten the vaccines?
Listen, this vaccine industry is the most pathetic science of all time. They will never do
science, is it?
No, it's not. I mean, what should be done is a scientific experiment that's so simple a first grader could come up with a solution. And all you do is you take one group of people that have been vaccinated, you take another group of people that haven't been vaccinated, you follow them for a couple of years, and you see, did the vaccine work? Did it prevent illness in the group that got the vaccine? And you look at the group that had the vaccine and see, did they have complications that weren't in the other group? What's so darn complicated about doing that?
Because they're trying to come from a place to say that it's not ethical, that it's unethical because they know it works and they don't want to deprive people of getting the vaccine.
So well, that's an emotional thought. That's an opinion. That's not science. Science requires that you do that. And there's nothing like the swine flu vaccine. Talk about a scam. I followed that back in 2009 every single day. Every single day. And I watched the shenanigans that were put out by the World Health Organization, the White House, the CDC, the FDA, the company that made the vaccine. I mean, look at the person that was in charge of the CDC. That was Julie Geberding at the time. Julie Geberding's a doctor. Her term was up. Where do you think she works today? She runs Merck's Department for Immunizations. Come on, guys.
A little conflict of interest there.
I mean, talk about something that's outrageous.
You know, if people want to learn more about this particular topic, just go to drsaputo.com mm-hmm. and then put in the infection deception.
Part one, yes. And you'll get an overview of what happened in just a few pages, and it's well referenced, so it's a scientific paper. It was published in the Townsend newsletter for doctors and patients, and it shows the unbelievable inconsistencies in the part of those organizations I just mentioned.
Well, see, these vaccine researchers, they don't want to do their studies on animals, so
they do them on animals first. And then they find out if that's reasonable to do for a human being. And then they must do human trials, too. But if you don't do them on people, then you don't know what's going to happen to people. And the sad part about this is that the experiment is being done on you and me, forcibly almost. Because look at all the ads that say, go get your swine flu vaccine, even a couple of years later. After that debacle of the swine flu vaccine was presented to us, we're still assuming that we need the vaccine. Hospitals are still requiring their staffs to take it. And we don't even know the vaccine works. We're not sure about the side effects. And the whole business about safety is thrown out the window. The experiment's being done, and it's not even being tracked. And I say it's unethical to look at a group that's not immunized. Well, listen, not everybody takes the immunization anyway. So why not track those people? Compare them to the people that have been immunized. Talk about wanting to withhold a scientific study. This is a classic example of that. And who's behind it? The pharmaceutical industry, the FDA, the CDC, the World Health Organization. There is a conspiracy here that's unbelievable.
Well, you know, too, there are a lot of safety issues that are associated with having a vaccine.
I'll say.
You know, when you get a vaccination, there's mercury in there. Everybody's
a lot of them have mercury. Some don't.
Time.
You have to be fair.
Well,
some don't.
Okay, the ones that don't are the ones that are the single
that's
vial,
right.
And you need to know to ask for that.
That's right.
But, you know, I remember this woman telling me that she went to the doctor with her baby to get the vaccine, and she told the doctor she didn't want mercury in
right.
it. And he said, oh, they don't put mercury in it anymore.
Right.
And she said, well, I really feel better if we could look at the bottle. And they looked at the bottle, and the doctor almost fell over because he was surprised that there was mercury in it.
Well, the amount of thimerosal, which is a form of mercury that's in a lot of those vaccines, is very toxic. You talk about giving an immunization to a child, an infant. Even though they have to be 6 months old, I think, to be able to qualify to take this ridiculous vaccine, that's a pretty good dose. And if you count up the number of immunizations that are given to kids by the time they're 18, it's well over 60.
Isn't that terrible?
So you're injecting 60 vaccines that have, some of which have mercury. They all have large amounts of DNA and viruses and virus fragments. Sometimes the viruses are alive. You know, in the case of polio, there hasn't been a single case of live polio in probably a couple of decades. Where do all the cases of polio come from? The vaccine. Isn't that something?
Well, so, too, there are other things in it besides the things that you just mentioned, too,
exactly.
You know, like formaldehyde and aluminum. And
well, I think it's about
like that.
Time that we do a clinical trial. And show those people that are immunized and how they do, and take those people that aren't and see how they do. It's not complicated. It's not unethical.
Isn't that what they're talking about doing in Britain? They're talking about making it mandatory to be in the trial.
Well, you're in the trial anyway, you know, because they're doing it on you when they give you the vaccine. They require you, okay, if you work in a hospital to take the vaccine, or they won't let you work there. So, I mean, they could do the studies right there if they want to. What they're talking about maybe is doing those trials prior to the time the vaccine comes out. So, to me, it's outrageous, unbelievable, unethical, and pathetic that this Nazi-like situation is being suggested when all we have to do is look at the people who've had the vaccine and those that haven't had the vaccine, follow them for a couple of years, and see what the outcome is. That would be a scientific study that would give you the answer. So why don't they do it? Because they don't want to know the answer.
Yeah, it sounds pretty straightforward.
Well, I mean, it is straightforward. A child could set up an experiment that would look at that, and they're still not going to do it. So that tells you that there's a reason for withholding that kind of data. Don't think they don't know the answers to this. You think that Big Pharma doesn't really know the answers to these things. They've been working with things like this sometimes for years, and they rarely tell us. if there's something that goes wrong, if they can get away with holding it. It's like the Vioxx scandal. You know what they knew about Vioxx and causing heart attacks and strokes? It was 4 years before the drug even came out. So in 1995, they knew about that. Then in 1999, when the drug came out, they withheld the information from the FDA. At least that's what they say. And then it was 5 years later, in 2004, the doctors start saying, something's wrong with this. Things are going wrong. People are getting heart attacks and strokes. Then they said, oh, well, we'll take it off the market. That's $20 billion later. I mean, talk about lack of ethics.
Anyway, if you want to know more about vaccines, there, you know, you can go to drsaputo.com and put in the infection deception. You can also go to VacTruth, that's VacTruth.com, and also drtenpenny.com.
Right, it's TENPENNY. That's to get the other side of the story. Of course you can go to the CDC. They've got plenty of propaganda on there, but you need to hear both sides.
Well, you know, many times complimentary and mainstream take sides for only, you know, one side.
That's true.
I mean, they don't look at both sides, really.
You've got to be fair. I think the CAM people tend to exaggerate the benefits of natural therapies, and the people who are the mainstream tend to exaggerate the benefits of what you do with drugs and surgeries and technologies. And look, there's a benefit to both sides. You'd never throw out the technology, the unbelievable technology in Western medicine. You'd have to be a moron to throw that out. But you also would have to be a moron, as we are, if we use that as primary care. You've got to be insane to use that as primary care. It's too expensive. We can no longer afford it. It's not safe because there are about 1 million deaths every year. And how well does it work overall when you look at the fact that 50% of Americans have a chronic disease? That's a terrible track record. But if you're really sick, you're going to go to your doctor because that's where your best chances are of recovering from it. But if you're not sick and you want to stay well, that's not the place to go. Go to your naturopath or your Chinese medicine doctor or your chiropractor. There are studies out there showing that they work every bit as well. They're far less invasive, less expensive, and of course, they're safe. You're listening to Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Saputo here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888. This hasn't riled you up a little bit. We'd like to hear what you think about what we're talking about.
Are we out to lunch? Are we taking a screen position?
What do you think? Have you got some stories to share with us about what happened to you? I'd like to hear from you. It's 888-874-4888.
So, can your shower curtain make you fat?
What? Make you fat?
You know, we know that the environmental toxins called phthalates are endocrine disruptors, and they can cause neurological problems. But doesn't it seem kind of strange that new research shows that phthalates can contribute to obesity? How can this be?
Well, it's an interesting story. You don't have to eat the shower curtain to be fat, okay? That would be a terrible way to gain weight. Oh, my God. But what does happen when you're exposed to environmental toxins is the following. Inflammation results every time you're exposed to a toxin. And every time there's inflammation, there are biochemical changes in the body.
All right, we're back. You're listening to Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Saputo here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888. And we were talking about why environmental toxins will make you fat, and getting to the topic of insulin resistance and leptin resistance. And insulin we all know about because in type 1 diabetics, there is insufficient insulin, and so blood sugar levels cannot be controlled. In type 2 diabetes, it's a totally different story. There's too much insulin, and it causes lots of problems for us because of that make us get fat, actually. And that's because the insulin doesn't work as well, so the pancreas just keeps making more of it. Now, leptin is a hormone that's made by the fat tissues of our body, and it's secreted when we have enough food in our stomachs that we don't need to eat anymore. So it's what makes our appetite go away. Now, if we don't have enough leptin because there's leptin resistance, the appetite doesn't go away. So what happens is you keep eating. So now you're in your shower real happy and taking your nice warm shower, and all that chlorine is coming out of the water, and the phthalates are coming out of the shower curtain. And what do you think is happening? Your body's getting exposed to these toxic chemicals. And when that happens, your leptin levels go up because of leptin resistance. Your appetite doesn't go down, and you eat too much.
Well, those phthalates are also in the shampoo and the hair conditioner and all the things.
Well, yeah, the shower curtain was just kind of an interesting way of presenting it. Anyway, the lines are open. This is Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Sabuda here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888. We'll be back taking your calls after Vicki's first 2020 tip.
Well, whistleblowers sent a letter to federal regulators warning that contaminated baby wipes were streaming out of a factory, and the owner wasn't telling the government or the public about it. So a couple of the employees wrote to the U.S. FDA and told them that they knew of the contamination, but they continued to ship potentially dangerous wipes to the hands and the bodies of thousands of Americans. And the plant officials even had a code phrase that they would broadcast over the intercom, Judy Life to the front desk, Judy Life to the front desk, in the event of a surprise inspection. So a few weeks later, an FDA investigator got there unannounced, and he found problems including faulty product testing and poor sanitation. And the company records show that the customers have been complaining about mold, foreign objects in the wipes, like a dead cockroach and razor blade.
Wow.
And so the company that makes the wipes for the retailers under many different brand names announced a nationwide recall, and that was included like 20 brands of some of these potentially contaminated baby wipes. So the FDA test results came back proving that the suspect wipes were contaminated with a bacterium that poses a health risk to anybody with a compromised immune system, and the levels were thousands of times higher than the FDA and the industry guidelines had claimed to be safe.
Amazing.
And it was enough to sicken anyone, even those with healthy immune systems, according to experts. You know, plus I just want to bring up here, because we've been talking about this topic about the phthalates and how dangerous they can be. Baby wipes contain chemical toxins, and one of the toxins that they include are phthalates.
Yeah.
You know, phthalates there are many different phthalates, and like dibutyl phthalate, for example. So usually when you see phthalate, it's a part of a word, and there also are no requirements to even write them on the labels. And in the phthalates, baby wipes, they're in the baby wipes along with other things like dioxins and triclosan and things that are, you know,
it's a toxic
group. That are not healthy. So
sure.
You need to find healthier ways for your babies. And, you know, phthalates can even be found in tampons and sanitary napkins, and it's pretty interesting what they're in. They're even on phthalates are even on the coatings of certain medications and even nutritional supplements.
They're on the insides of the cans of a lot of canned foods, too, so you can just get it directly from your canned food.
And baby toys and cars, but especially fragrances, nail polishes, nail polish removers, and all that kind of thing. So
right.
You really need to be careful when anything says it has a phthalate on it. You know, phthalates can also cause birth defects, cancer, asthma, low birth weight, type 2 diabetes, like Dr. Saputo already mentioned, can make you gain weight, and it can slowly demasculinize boys.
Yep. Well, it's a problem, Vicki. That's a great tip. Thanks for all that.
Well, I kind of got off the tip into the rest of our article here, because obesity increased 7 to 40% from 1980 to 2008, and it looks like part of the reason was all the phthalates that we're contaminating ourselves with. Actually, there's a lot more on phthalates, too, if you want to go to drsaputo.com and put in Vicki's Corner,
mm-hmm.
and I talk about it on there.
Well, you know, there was a study, Vicki, on 387 kids in New York, where they measured body mass index, which compares height and weight together. And they looked at phthalate levels, and if your phthalate levels were in the highest group, if you were overweight to start with, you were about 10% more likely to have a problem with obesity than if you were in the lowest section of phthalate levels, and everybody's got them. So that's a big deal.
Well, there's making some effort to try to get them out of some of the baby toys.
Well, yeah, there's some legislation was passed to do that.
But, that's, you know, right. there's two points of view about this, because the people that manufacture products the phthalates, they're in denial about it and say, well, you can't prove it. But
they want to make sure that it's proven that it causes a problem before they take it out, and the rest of us are going, wait a minute.
Just like the Vioxx scandal.
Well, it's similar. Yeah, they want to wait until it's cut and dried, and people like us don't want to take any chances. So I think we need to be on the safe side and work that way.
And another thing that we didn't mention was that it's also in IV bags and tubing and things like that in the hospital. So lots of different ways to get it.
Exactly. All right. Thanks for that, Vicki. The lines are open. This is Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Saputo here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888.
Well, more on environmental toxins. You know, we live in a sea of toxins. I mean, it's in the air we breathe, whether we're inside or outside. It's in the water we drink. It's in the food we eat. It's what we put on our bodies and in our bodies. So
even in the soil, we polluted the soil.
So
when you grow things, it comes out with all the pollutants that are in the soil.
So how do we deal with these environmental toxins? There's a lot of them that we can't seem to avoid.
Well, that's right. Well, there are things you can do, and there was an article that came out in Life Extensions by a Dr. Michael Smith, and they gave practical advice for avoiding environmental toxins, and some of the things they talked about are ways to minimize your exposure. And so they're talking about things like volatile organic compounds. Those are the things that outgas from things like paints and lacquers and varnishes and air fresheners and carpet cleaners. Disinfectants.
VOCs.
Right. I know when we painted my office and we painted the house, we got low VOC paint.
You know, and it's not even much more expensive. It's $2 or $3 more.
For a gallon. That's right. So that's one thing you can do. Second, you can store your food in containers that are labeled bisphenol A free. You want it to be phthalate free.
Well, glass is a better idea if you can. Use glass
ceramic
containers.
Glass, or
but sometimes you have to be careful of ceramic because they might use lead in the glaze.
There's a lot of ways to go wrong, aren't there? Another thing you can do is look for organic produce, because that's really important. Because why would you want to spray your food with a toxin? If you were having dinner and eating organic food and somebody came by with their can of Raid and sprayed it on your food, you wouldn't eat it. But if they do it when you don't see it, looks fine to me. Must be good because everybody else is doing it, and Safeway thinks it's a good idea. So there you are.
Well, there are also nutrients that support detoxification.
Yeah. Well.
Like garlic, for example.
Well, garlic is a great thing because it has a lot of sulfur compounds in it, and they can reverse the depletion of intrinsic liver antioxidants that are there. So that's a good thing to do, and it helps us make glutathione, which I think is really important. Then there are things like broccoli, all the things in the cruciferous vegetable family that are there.
And the polyphenols that are in our vegetables and black tea.
Exactly. The things in green vegetables, the chlorophyll and the chlorophyllin. If you want a good article on that, go to our website at drsaputo.com and go to our Fast Track radio shows, and we'll have a video that's about 5 minutes long that talks about how chlorophyll and chlorophyllin work to try and protect us against environmental toxins.
And cancer.
And cancer, sure.
And then there's milk thistle.
Right, which is known as silymarin. Another good, it's a good plant substance, a botanical, that's rich in polyphenols, and what it does is it speeds up detoxification. So there are a lot of things that we can do that can help us from the huge exposures we have from toxic chemicals that are in the environment.
Well, healthy lifestyle is a good idea, too, because when you exercise, you excrete a lot of the toxins. And when you get enough sleep, your body can repair. And if you drink a lot of good, pure water, and if you eat healthy.
All good things. All right, the lines are open. This is Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Saputo here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888, and we'll be back taking your calls after a brief station break.
Progressive Radio Network is now on iTunes. Search for us to listen and download past shows or get them updated automatically. Just type Progressive Radio Network in the search bar and download any show free of charge. Progressive Radio Network, information for the independent mind.
Hi there, this is Harvey Wasserman for the Green Power and Wellness Show, coming at you on the Progressive Radio Network every Tuesday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time. And you can catch up on the show and other shows like it in the archives at prn.fm. We talk every Tuesday about occupying this planet by saving the environment and your health with a solartopian vision of true democracy and ecological harmony. The Progressive Radio Network is moving forward, and we hope you're coming with us.
Honesty without fear. The Whistleblowers Radio Hour on Tuesdays at 1 p.m.
After every scandal, we learned that there were citizens who tried to alert the public, but were silenced and retaliated against.
I did not grow up wanting to become a whistleblower, but it was my job and my moral obligation to demand that truth and justice be honored.
Hear from leading whistleblower lawyers about how you can protect yourself if you expose waste, fraud, or corruption.
This country would be a much better place when we all recognize the contributions that whistleblowers make to our society and protect them from retaliation.
Learn from prominent whistleblowers who've lived through it.
Support those who protect you.
Whistleblowers are key to holding government and corporations accountable. Empower yourself. Know your rights.
Tune in to hear me interview some of our nation's heroes.
Tune in to Honesty Without Fear, Tuesdays at 1 p.m. The Progressive Radio Network is moving forward, and we hope you're coming with us.
I'm Molly Barrow, and you're invited to listen to the Dr. Molly Barrow Show. We discuss cutting-edge health, psychology, relationships, science, politics, and personal growth with top experts like Drs. John Gray, Barry Sears, Sita Shankaran, and Arthur C. Mercoli. You can be part of the conversation, too. Visit my website at drmollybarrow.com and join us every Tuesday morning at 10 Eastern on Progressive Radio Network.
Don't miss out on Dr. Michio Kaku's weekly show, Explorations. Dr. Kaku is the only scientist with his own nationally syndicated radio show. Explorations is the program that explains complex physics with an accessible approach. So take an exploration with Dr. Michio Kaku, Tuesdays at 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, to discuss topics ranging from space exploration to stem cell research.
Listening to PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
You're listening to Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Saputo here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888.
If a doctor doesn't make extra money from ordering screening tests, they often don't remember to order them. You know, this is information from a study on preventive screens, but are they preventive or are they early detection?
Well, that's a good point. But the point that we're making here in this article, which was published in the American Journal of Preventive Medicine, is that doctors are not ordering a lot of the cancer screening and other tests that can be done on a routine basis. And part of it is because they say that there's no incentive for them to do it, although I think that any doctor who has a conscience and really wants to work with their patients to provide the services they need should at least be thinking about this. The other thing is, let's face it, in HMO medicine, who's got time to be thinking about things like prevention when you've got 15 or 20 minutes or 30 minutes to do a physical on somebody, and then there's all this business about trying to do the other things that are not part of that process.
Well, I thought it was interesting in this study that 20% of people get annual physicals,
of adults,
and half of those don't get preventive tests. So I guess only 10% of people are getting tests. Well, they call them preventive tests.
Well, you know, that's not exactly the worst thing in the world, too, because a lot of these tests are overdone.
I mean,
do you need a mammogram if you're under the age of 50? The answer is outright no, you don't. In fact, in my mind, it's malpractice. I'll go that far. And yes, I think the medical profession is complicit in that. And what we have is a status quo benefit for the people who are in that business.
It doesn't mean you shouldn't be tested. You can be tested by a breast thermography.
Well, I think breast screening is okay, but it's way overdone. And I know that there are 40,000 deaths every year from that. But you have to have something that shows that there's a real benefit to doing it. If you've got to do 2,000 mammograms to extend the life of one person, hello, you're doing an awful lot of tests, and you're causing one or two cancers from just doing the procedure. So is that really something you want to do?
And the other test that's routinely ordered are colonoscopy after people are age 50.
Well, that's another one you could question. In fact, it's being questioned in the medical literature right now. And the idea is, well, how much benefit do you really get from a colonoscopy? If you're asymptomatic, I'm talking about screening people who don't have symptoms. If you talk about people who have symptoms, absolutely. A colonoscopy is a beautiful test because the chances are it's going to tell you what you've got and it's going to rule out some things you hope you don't have. But when you're looking at doing it routinely on people who don't have symptoms, 1 in 200 people will have a perforation or a GI bleed that's severe enough that you'll be in the hospital getting transfusions.
It's an invasive test.
And it's got side effects.
Plus, they give you sedatives that could have side effects
as
well.
Well, that's right. So where's the data that says this is a worthwhile process? It's not there, and that's what people are looking at. So by proclamation, what we've done is assume that a colonoscopy is a good test at age 50. And who came up with this idea? I'd like to know, because I'm not so sure I know who made that proclamation and said that's what we should do.
Well, people that make money off of them.
Well, that's some of it. And there is a conflict of interest for sure. I mean, all the gastroenterologists are sending notes to my patients all the time saying, it's time for your colonoscopy. And I know what that means. They wouldn't send out notices if they didn't need the business. It's about keeping busy. Most of the time, and I'm not saying there aren't a few conscientious doctors out there who would say, well, I really think this person should have a colonoscopy because they had such and such a problem, and it needs to be followed up. So, for example, someone who has ulcerative colitis, should a colonoscopy be done on a regular basis? Absolutely, because the risk of colon cancer goes way up, and you'd like to be staying on top of that if you can. But look at it this way. If you don't have any symptoms and you don't have a reason for having a colonoscopy other than it's a routine screen, if you are a healthy person who is exercising and whose vitamin D levels are normal, the risk of or the chances of finding something are more like about 1 in 400. Now, would you really want to have to do 400 colonoscopies, perforate at least one or two people and have GI bleeds on top of that to find one person whose life's going to be extended because the procedure was done? Wash. So these kinds of things that doctors are not ordering is maybe because they're not so sure either. I know years ago when I was in practice doing these kinds of things, practicing mainstream medicine, this was more than 20 years ago, I was intimidated by people who said, you have to have this particular test. As a screening test. I felt if I didn't order the colonoscopy or the mammogram or the PSA or the pap smear, that I was a bad doctor. But now that I've studied these things and I have some experience in it, the whole story's different. It's like, am I entitled to make a decision myself as a practicing physician about what test to do or not? And the answer is absolutely. And why do I say that? Can you trust the people who are saying you need to have that mammogram under age 50 or you need that colonoscopy as a screening test or you should be doing that PSA on a routine basis? Better think twice, because the organizations that are coming out with these statements are ones that have conflicts of interest. Okay. The lines are open. This is Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Saputo with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888. We'll be back taking your calls after Vicki's next and final 2020 tip.
So never look down on anybody unless you're helping them up.
Huh, there's a good idea.
To realize the value of 10 years, ask a newly divorced couple. To realize the value of 4 years, ask a graduate. Mm. To realize the value of 1 year, ask a student who's failed a final exam. And to realize the value of 9 months, ask a mother who gave birth to a stillborn.
Mm.
To realize the value of 1 month, ask a mother who's given birth to a premature baby.
Oh, boy.
And to realize the value of 1 minute, ask a person who's missed the train, the bus, or the plane. to realize the value of 1 second, ask a person who's survived an accident. You know, time doesn't wait for anybody, so we need to treasure every moment that we have. And we'll treasure it even more when we can share it with somebody special. So to realize the value of a friend or a family member, just lose one.
Oh, boy.
And remember, just hold on tight to the ones you love.
Indeed. Well, that's such wise advice. You know, one of the things that we miss in our lives, particularly as young people, is kids who are just living at home that are just, you know, under the age of five. We need to be learning life values and what matters and how we live together in peace and what our meaningful purpose in life is. Because we're not born with some kind of instruction manual that tells us how to live our lives. And a lot of the times, the people who are raising us don't have that worked out for themselves. And so they got all these things that they want us to do, and they impose restrictions on us. And I know when I was growing up, my parents said, you be the best you can be in everything you do, and study hard, and make sure you get good grades, and excel, and compete, and all that stuff. And as I look back at that, they had good intentions, but they were in part right, but in part they were really wrong. Because it's not about competing. It's not about excelling necessarily. It's about being happy and finding joy and meaningful purpose in life, which is a lot about what we do when that's what makes us happy. We should be teaching that to our kids in school.
Well, the other thing is, too, is that if we want peace on earth and in our lives, we need to be teaching kids about morality and conscience and social justice.
Well, those things are more important than learning to read or write or do arithmetic.
And dignity.
Yeah, all those things are what it's all about. So when you talk about precious moments, you don't have it worked out in your own mind about what's important in life and what you hope to achieve from it, how will you ever find out how to spend your time wisely? And you wonder why America has so much discontent. America is basically depressed. People are complaining. There are people that come to me with their health issues. A lot of it's related to what they never learned when they were kids. You know, that book, everything I ever needed to know, I learned in kindergarten. Such a wise thing, because it's about being together and holding hands and having some warm milk and cookies. Yeah, sure, have a cookie, it's okay. If you're going to do it that way, you don't want to live your life as you're not going to go out and have broccoli with your friends necessarily that tastes like crap. So, broccoli by itself, particularly raw, not for me.
Well, it's everything in moderation.
Well, it's a balance, but you got to enjoy yourself. And
well, just like it's good to get good grades in school and to learn things and everything, but these other things need to be included as well.
Well, they need to be first. And that's what you're talking about when you talk about these precious moments. They need to be first. And we need to really honor them, because if we had a community that was geared to that, think of what it would be like. We'd be helping each other. We'd be supporting one another. We would be loving one another. We'd be wanting to give rather than take. We'd want to share. It's not about me competing and having more money and things that you do. Life isn't a contest to find out who has more toys. I'm sure you've all heard that one before. And it's not. So center yourself. Center the people around you. Be the change you want to see. Teach people what's really important in life by example. Walk your talk. If you do it that way, you'll be happy. The people around you will think you're amazing. They'll want to be like you. And that's how we evolve as a country.
You know, one of the biggest causes of disease is dis-ease.
Absolutely.
And that's where I think a lot of stress and anxiety comes from, is from our backgrounds, and for many people, it's their childhood that they've never really healed from. So.
Have you ever seen a family that wasn't dysfunctional in some major way?
But parents need to really grasp that.
Well, we have to teach
when
them.
When they're raising their children, and
exactly.
Think about how important and what an influence they have on their children's whole life.
Yeah, well, until we can pass a test that shows that we understand that, I think we shouldn't be allowed to have children. It's why older parents do a better job with their children.
Because they're wiser.
Yeah, they've been through a lot. They learn what not to do.
They learn more patience also.
Well,
with time.
Exactly. I mean, children are such precious things. You know, they come through us, but we don't own them. And what we should be doing is helping them to understand what life is about and to find ways that they can find joy by not being narcissistic, but by sharing and giving and making other people happy.
Well, you know, I think a lot of times parents tend to do the power thing, you know.
For
like,
sure.
I'm the boss.
Yeah, so. Right.
You don't need a reason. You just do this or that because I said so.
Exactly. And that goes on for generation after generation.
And children are to be seen and not heard.
Oh, there's the worst one. Yeah. I mean, children are to be cherished, honored, and given boundaries that are good boundaries. And
there was a story I heard once. I think I might have even told it on the air about this couple that had taken in the wife's father. And he was kind of bothering them at the dinner table. He kind of made a mess, and he had to wear a bib, and he drooled and,
oh boy,
and that kind of thing. So they ended up putting him in at a table in the corner of the room while the husband and wife and the son ate together. And then one day the little boy, he was just playing by himself with his blocks and stuff, and they said, "What are you doing?" And he says, "Well, I'm making your table for when you're old, like Grandpa's, where you can sit."
Oh,
and the next night, from then on,
Grandpa was back at the table.
Dinner table.
Yeah, really. Well, see, that's really a beautiful story. We don't behave that way with a lot of what we do in our lives, and it's an evolutionary step that raises us to a higher level of consciousness, which is what this country needs if we're going to start living in a true community rather than living as isolated, at least seemingly isolated parts. It's a shame that that's what's happening, and we need to evolve if we want to make things change from the way they are. I mean, look at how our government works and how Congress is so polluted and so geared towards money and being reelected rather than trying to serve the people. It's outrageous that they do that, and then they come back when it's time for reelection and they make all these dumbass promises that we are even dumber to believe, and we vote for them again. We need to set the example and share the thinking and walk our talk. Those are the kinds of things that impress people, not promises. All right, the lines are open. This is Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Saputo here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888.
Meprobamate, also known as Miltown and Equinil, it's been recalled in Europe after 50 years of being on the market.
What happened?
But you know what else I think is interesting? They've found that this drug has some pretty bad side effects, and it's actually very dangerous. But the U.S. has not taken it off the market. This is just Europe.
Well, this happens a lot. You know, Darvon was around when I was in my internship back in the 60s, okay?
Yeah, I remember taking that.
Yeah, everybody was taking it. Last year, that was taken off the market. What the hell is the FDA doing to regulate these things? And what are the companies doing to collect their data after the drug has been already approved? They're supposed to be doing what they call post-surveillance marketing study.
Yeah, right. Nobody checks up on it.
No, as long as the check is coming in every month and the stockholders are getting paid, nobody cares. And then after 50 years, you take a drug off the market, you just say, oh man, this drug is dangerous.
This drug is used for anxiety and for muscle relaxation.
Mm-hmm.
And they also use it for gastrointestinal problems, insomnia, and for migraine headaches. But we need to talk about what some of the risks can be, because they can be pretty serious, like coma. Well, the most serious is death.
That's pretty serious.
Seizures, making your heart beat too fast, not urinating.
Well, it can cause kidney
you can
problems.
Have withdrawal from it.
Well, that's the biggest thing. The withdrawal is what kills a lot of people, because they have seizures or they go into a coma. And, it also causes depression and it causes suicides. Now,
like many of the other antidepressants.
Well, I mean, just listen to any direct...
It's such a joke.
Just listen to a direct-to-consumer ad on television and really listen to it. You know, the first part is really great, and there's nice music and color and people with happy faces and say, oh, I found this thing and it does all these great things. And then at the end, for about the other third or half of the advertisement, they're talking about it. Yeah, it can cause Stevens-Johnson syndrome, which will make you die from a skin lesion. It can cause GI perforations and bleeding. It can cause seizures, coma, death, heart attacks, and strokes. But don't worry, because it may help you with your depression.
But isn't it also ironic to think that something that's used for anxiety, or like with the other medications like the SSRIs or what have you that are used for depression, that they can cause depression?
Oh, yeah.
They can cause suicide?
Look, when these drugs, these SSRIs, were looked at, when they took all the studies that were done, whether published or not, and then looked to see if it was any better than placebo, what did they find?
No better than placebo.
Placebo was just as good, but guess what? The placebo didn't have any side effects.
Well, also, they have found that exercise works better.
Indeed. A guy named Blumenthal from Duke, maybe that wasn't his name, but something like that, did studies on people with exercise and found just an hour, three times a week of exercise worked as well as Prozac.
They've also done studies that show that women that talk to a girlfriend, that works as well as an antidepressant. So I figure if you take a walk with a girlfriend, you're doing two things right there.
That's right. So what should we be doing to try and help people who are anxious or depressed?
Well, first, though, I wanted to just finish up on the Milltown, because...
Okay, I wasn't done with it, but go ahead.
Oh, well, because if you can become addicted to it, so like... After you're listening to us, you don't want to, and you're taking it, you don't want to just stop abruptly. You need to do it gradually. You withdraw it over how long of a period of time? A couple weeks or something?
Oh, at least, yeah. You don't want to just stop it, because the body becomes adapted to it, and then you take it away.
It can kill you.
Yeah, well, it can kill you, and that's one of the reasons why, in Europe anyway, it was taken off the market, not yet here in the U.S. You know, I question the use of these drugs anyway. We tend in psychiatry to be doing psychopharmacology now. And I will say that drugs that are used in psychotherapy, or drugs that are used instead of psychotherapy, never, ever, ever, ever treat the underlying cause. Never, ever. I don't know one situation where they would.
It's called masking the symptoms.
That's exactly what it is. So it takes the anxiety down, but it doesn't take away the problem that caused the anxiety. The antidepressants may do something, whether it's placebo or not, to reduce some of the depressive symptoms, but it doesn't remove the problems that got you depressed.
So you get dependent on taking the drug.
Well, yeah, and I think it's a crime to do it that way. Now, as a general thing, that's a crime. Are there times when I use antidepressants and anti-anxiety drugs in my practice and sleeping pills? You bet I do. But it's not very often, and it's only in those people who it doesn't look like there's another way to make the quality of their life half decent. You may not be able to solve everybody's problem, and that's okay, because you're only a doctor, right? Not a magician.
Okay, so after you've tried to deal with what the cause of the anxiety is, there are some things that can be helpful, like psychosomatic work, where it's a body-mind connection.
Well, it's called somatic psychotherapy, okay, as opposed to psychotherapy. And I've got problems with psychotherapy in some settings as well. I mean, if you go to the psychologist or the psychiatrist and you get psychotherapy and you learn a lot about your issues and it helps your anxiety and your depression and you find joy and happiness in your life, say in a year or two or a few months after treatment, very nice. Beautiful. Do
that. Some people end up going for years and years and years.
Exactly. After 15 or 20 years, and you know everything about yourself, because every aspect of what's gone wrong, that from all the dysfunctional things you were exposed to as a kid, you understand.
And your therapist falling asleep in the chair while you're talking.
Well, maybe, because they've heard it 50 times. I mean, it's like a broken record. But you still have a problem. These people are stuck in their head. Psychotherapy is not what they need.
So maybe they need to try some alternatives, like maybe a little hypnotherapy or some acupuncture.
Well, yes and no.
Meditation?
Yes and no.
Rosenwork?
Well, yes, Rosenwork. Some of the things that we use in complementary and alternative medicine don't do anything different than the drugs do. They suppress the symptoms.
Well, they don't have bad side effects.
Well, that's good. I mean, it doesn't solve the reason why we got anxious or depressed. What you have to do there is is to deal with that. And when you're talking about somatic psychotherapy, what do I mean? Now you're talking about people who have had experiences that they couldn't solve at the time they happened. They're usually kids, and they're abused emotionally, physically, or sexually. So they repress what's happened. They do the best they can to defend against it, but it doesn't really ever solve the problem because they haven't worked it through. And so psychotherapy may not work for it, but all these experiences that we had are also stored in the body. They're stored in our muscles. And when you work with somebody who is an experienced somatic psychotherapist, they are very good at loosening up all the tense areas in your body where you store these memories and can actually cause them to be released and come into conscious awareness. Now, what's the value of that? If this happens years or decades even, or even half a century later after the event occurred, you've got the opportunity to re-experience what that particular trauma was at a time when you have the tools to deal with it, as opposed to when they happened and you were a helpless kid who didn't have time to develop these tools. So this is a brilliant way to work to get through your problems. And a lot of the time, a way to do it is to work with a very capable body worker who understands what's called somatic experiencing. It's Peter Levine's work, and for those of you who want to learn about it, you can go to his book, called Waking the Tiger, that will teach you about how that works.
There's also something called the Fortenberry-Murray method.
Yeah, there are lots of ways to do that. Most kinds of body work, if you have experience, are beautiful at that. And if you will do that, then you can work through the problems in a way where you can actually resolve them, because you know that never, ever again would you be vulnerable to those problems happening to you because you're too strong to do it now. But the problem is that the triggers that we developed when we were a kid often are lifelong. And when those triggers continue to haunt us, the fear keeps us from readdressing the problem. And so we wind up in this horrible cycle where we get all freaked out because of what's happening to us from the triggers that remind us of the traumas, and we're afraid to do anything different. So we react like we did when we were a kid. It's a tragedy that we don't have more people who are approaching these kinds of problems, which are all over our society, on a regular basis, because the psychiatrists don't do that. In fact, they're not even supposed to touch you. Yeah. There's supposed to be no physical contact, which is the most outrageous thing, because touch is such a powerful tool. Why would you want to take some of the tools that we could use out of what you're doing? It just doesn't make any sense. It's like a handicap. It's like playing tennis with a fly swatter instead of a tennis racket. Why would you do that? So this whole subject is really important and complicated, and we need to pay attention more so to what we're doing. And when people talk about meprobamate or Xanax or Librium or Valium or any of these drugs, yeah, now and then it's a way to deal with things. But in general, it's malpractice. All right. So here we are at the end of our show again. I'm Dr. Len Saputo here with Nurse Vicki, and we'd like to remind you that we'll be back live to talk about what's new in the news in health and to take your health questions every Monday afternoon on PRN.FM and on drsaputo.com from 3 to 4 Eastern Time and 12 to 1 Pacific Time. Prescriptions for health will also be archived on drsaputo.com as well as PRN.FM.
And if you've enjoyed today's show and you'd like to have more information on the topics that we discussed, go to drsaputo.com. That's drsaputo.com, and check out our fast track videos. And remember, lifestyle is the most powerful healer in the universe. So if you want to be well, pay attention to the style in which you live your life.
Yeah, I want to make one more little point here, and that's that, you know, these videos that we have are radio shows that are short bites. And they last from about 3 to 7 or 8 minutes. They come out every day in video with Vicki and I, or me interviewing somebody, or myself, talking about what's new in the news, about the hottest things that are there. And you can see it. And you can, if you go to the website, you can subscribe to it. And maybe we can send them to you every day if that's what you want. So have a wonderful week. It's great to be with you. See you next week.